Shopping Maniacs, you're listening to a future episode of the Shop Talk Show coming at you live from 2020. I'm Dave. In the future, Rupert Hoverboard Rupert with me is Chris DeLorean with the garbage compactor Coyer.
Hell yeah.
Hey, Chris, how are you doing?
Oh, I just had to take my auto tying shoes to the cleaner.
Yeah, I made some sports bets on future baseball. and, good. You know. Yeah, it's good so far.
McRupert! Hey, how are you doing? McRupert! Hey,
that was literally my AOL screen name. That is, wow, that's, hey, wow, mm-hmm. Throwback. Hey, so we're here in 2020, and everything exists in CSS now. Isn't that great? Because for the last 20 years, we've been saying maybe in 2020 we'll have that. And it's 2020, and we have it all now.
Well, there was some sentiment going around about, you know, like Scott Gell wrote for CSS Tricks, like, the tools are here. That, like, there's a sentiment that, like, wow, things got really good in the last bunch of years, and that we're not sitting around like, well, the web would be good if we had this. It's like, no, we kind of got it all. Like, we still wish for, like, container queries. And there's all this stuff that we're like, but we'll always do that. We'll always be like, more, give me something cool. But we've gotten so much, and it's started to, like, roll out in slightly better cross-browser ways that it's just better now, in a way, the web is.
It's neat because, like, all the problems, you know, layout problems or responsive issues, a lot of those are just solved. I mean, I use Grid like a maniac now, and it just solves so many problems. It's easy to lay out a page. It's trivial. Like, you just write the code and it's done. And I mean, there's a little bit of footwork to do for the responsive view, but, like, man, it's so easy to lay out a page now. And I think it just generally changes everything about CSS. I mean, now I can spend, instead of spending 3 days on getting the layouts all in order, the grid CSS file, I can just, it's just done. It's one line of code, and I use it when I need it. So I don't know. It's a good future.
Yeah, it's a good future. Kyle Matthews, Gatsby, he's their guy over there. He was just tweeting today, like, this massive thread of, you know, future predictions. I've probably read more future predictions this year than I ever have in my life. My gosh, everybody and their sister wants to tell me about what's going to happen.
Adam Argo had one.
I liked his because it was all CSS only, and you don't see a lot of people doing that. Like, there's not that many. It feels weird to say, but, like, people just aren't writing about CSS as much as they used to.
Well, I got opinions on that. I think just before the holidays, I wrote a thing about details not being an accordion element.
I remember. Yeah. What was your postulate there? Is that it quite literally isn't, like, don't try to make it one because it will be problematic.
I can't. No, because the summary element, it has role equals button in most browsers. I think there's technically a role equals summary, but I could be wrong on that. But role equals button. And if you put a button, it eats the semantics of everything in there. So you can't have a heading inside the button. Like, button H3 just will nuke the H3 basically to a screen reader. So if somebody tries to browse by headings, they don't.
Well, what if your accordion is just paragraphs inside of it? Is that cool then?
If it's just, like, strong tags, like, yeah, like, and, you know, it depends on your design, but the Y authoring guide, Web Accessibility Initiative authoring practices, they actually recommend having a heading in there. They require that, or that they say, like, it needs to have a heading inside of it. To be navigable, because if you think of, like, an FAQ page, you know, somebody has to listen to every single, like, they can't just browse by headings. They have to go through the whole page or whatever. So, I don't know. Anyway, I sort of punched the web standards bee's nest, by suggesting we need things like an accordion element or a tabs element or a drop-down element or, tooltip. I mean, any of these things we do every time and are in every single design system, we need elements or primitives for this.
Yeah. And the story, as you know, is long. You don't just, it's not just delivered on a platter one year. And as a matter of fact, you know, what this makes me think of, just as a minor aside here, is that it's hard to write a post that says, this is what happened in HTML and CSS in 2019. Because things are like longer than a year span. Like, it doesn't just, it's not like we shipped some version of something and then it's production ready. Everybody can use it. Silver platter, go. Like, when a framework ships something, that's what it is. It says, we got this and now everybody can use it. It's here. Let's talk about React hooks. It's ready to rock for the world. It's just like that happened in 2019. Dialogue didn't happen in 2019. Nothing happened in 2019. I mean, kind of. There's a handful of things, but, you know.
Yeah, if anything, we found out we couldn't use a lot of stuff in 2019, you know?
Like, right, you can't use dialogue, you can't use menu, you can't use blah, 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 you know? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I found out somebody said it and I like didn't believe it, but the main element, M-A-I-N, that's the main content section. How many years to get that going, Chris? How many years?
I don't know. I guess since the early days of HTML5, four or five.
It's a fancy div and it took 10 years and it's just a fancy div. So,
yeah,
I mean, there's things like I guess what you know about it had to evolve, like role equals main, you know, things like that. Like that maybe didn't exist 10 years ago when they started proposing it, but
yeah, it's anyway. Slower. It's just a different way. The way that you talk slower. About it has to be different.
And even like I encountered a lot of, upset Chrome developers through this thing, through this blog post that, you know, they were like, well, you know, Dave Rupert, you made fun of Toast when it came out, you know, you kind of spreaded some fear, uncertainty and doubt when Toast came out and pointed to like a very dumb Twitter joke I did on Twitter.
Yeah.
Which has me not wanting to use Twitter anymore. But, so first of all, sorry, I say dumb stuff on the internet. I apologize. I'm just going to blanket apology. But I think if you've listened to the show and you probably heard me say, like, I actually like Toast, I feel like its problems are it's very Google centric. And I felt like it was just rushed out the door. This was over the summer, right? Like kind of, and I felt like Chrome was just trying to like pilot a, here's how we do web standards the fast way. You know, we're going to ship a web component, but it's not going to be an actual web component. It'll be inside the browser and then we're going to ship it and then people are going to use it and then we'll standardize it like a different route for standardization. Mm-hmm. I think Toast itself is very like Android specific, you know, it's like an in browser notification or in page notification. That said, that I was looking at standard switch the other day for a design system because I just was like, oh, this is a cool way that they are doing switches. I can't NPM install it or anything, but I can like use it or I can see what they wrote and I could port that code and use it. But all to say, I actually don't hate the like standard element process that they proposed. I just think they kind of went about it in a bit of a poor fashion.
There was scary words. And I think when people are scared, like it's, I kind of get their perspective too, that if everybody dunks on it, then we've halted future progress on future things because it's like, oh my God, we tried to do one thing and you dunked on us so bad. Be like, okay, forget it. Let's not do stuff, you know? But that's a little unfair maybe, but
everyone's kind of got a chip on their shoulder or is very sensitive or was bitten by that whole experience.
But we have to watch it. My God, it's so easy to ruin what we have. There's so few watchdogs. We're going to be watchdogs. Most people aren't. Most people are just like, oh, here's the thing. I'll use it. You know, go to a meetup and be like, AMP, oh, what's that? Is that thing we need? Oh, yeah, I guess I'll look into putting that on our website. Not to like say people are dumb, but they're busy. They got other things going on. They just use what's there. They're just like, oh, that's a thing now. Okay, I guess we better get on it, you know, because they're busy running their businesses. You need watchdogs at the technological level.
I saw a blog post on Google. It told me to use it. I Googled it and it showed up on CSS Tricks because somebody was writing a post about it. So it's like, oh, therefore it's a thing. You know, it's like,
so
you just need people who kind of say, whoa, whoa, whoa. So I don't know. So anyway, I think like rather than like the 2 weeks they tried to ship Toast, like, and from that being the low end and the 10 years it took to ship the main element, I would love something in between where we could ship new HTML and CSS. You know, something in between there, 2 weeks and 10 years would be awesome. But
yeah,
I don't know. Anyway, what's neat though is I'm going to like be in some conversations kind of about like potential solutions. So there's a pretty good implementation that didn't go very far from Brian Cardell from Algolia, who did like a panel. And
is that where Brian works? Works at Algolia?
Yeah. Seriously? Yeah. He's like and Algolia, if you don't know, is like a
search thing, isn't
pay
it?
Pay to hire. No.
I think you like got it wrong. Algolia is search. No. He was at Apollo Group.
No. Hold on. Is it Apollo?
Well, but not the Apollo like GraphQL, like a different Apollo. Sorry.
Oh, man. Hold on. It's Igalia. Hold on. I'm losing it. Oh, man.
We all know who Brian is, though, and I want to bring him up for another reason. He really has his finger on the pulse of a lot of stuff that are going on. I just read a post about his about some color things that I won't take us down that direction just yet, but there's a way that web standards can work and that other companies get involved and they do the work and then ship it upstream to the browsers. That's how we got CSS Grid. It's a wonderful story, and it means that like it's not browser vendors themselves that you have to rub their shoulders and do all the politics of internalizing. If the community really wants stuff, you can actually throw some money at it and get stuff done.
Okay, I have it.
Okay.
Igalia, not Algolia. Igalia.
Cool.
Got it. Igalia. Who's like they're like a contract for hire. Like if Chrome implements something, Chrome will pay them, or AMP or somebody will pay them to implement something in WebKit or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Or in Gecko. Or like, oh, we need you to implement this. And so, yeah, he's right now, he has a kind of a proposal up for like unlocking colors is his blog post. But it's about possible like new color functions and things like that happening in CSS.
I think this is mouth bloggable for the podcast. And it was an Adam Argyle tweet that was so great. There's a three color swatches. Imagine three color swatches. On the left, gray. In the middle, blue. On the right, green. Now, that's terrible mouth blogging because you can't see the exact shades of them. But imagine that they just like illuminate a little differently. They have different lightness to them. And you look at them and be like, just guess, which one of these do you think has the most lightness? Is like the brightest one of them, and which is like kind of the dullest one of them? Well, you look at them all and you're like,
gray, yeah, like space gray.
So pretty low.
Green's like a neon green,
pretty
like
bright,
spray paint.
Pretty bright.
Right? Blue's like
in the middle.
A nice blue. I don't know. Like
so you look and you're like, which one has the most lightness? And you're like, I don't know, the green, then the blue, then the gray, probably. Like that's just trust your brain a little bit. Which one has the, you know, green, and if you're making a kind of a color system, you'd probably want to like throw the same have numbers that reflect that. Be like, this number is this brightness because that's my brain thinks it's that bright. And if I use the same number, then I'm going to get colors that I feel equally bright. Well, it turns out in HSL, which is kind of our best color format for this kind of thing at the moment, you know, like RGB, whatever, it's just our random numbers. You're not going to get anything useful out of that. Hex codes are equally, who knows what I'm looking at with a hex code. He's saying like all those three colors, those three swatches, they all have 50% lightness in HSL, all three of them. So it's kind of like, that's not that useful for us. Wouldn't it be nice to have another color format that has numbers in it that are even easier to reason about than HSL? I don't know much about lab color, this other, what is it? There's another thing, LSC, or I don't know. There's some other function that goes along with lab that's a function in CSS. And so, you know, Adam opens up a thing and says, look, we should put this, you know, it's already spec'd out in CSS4. Why don't we just do it? And Tab Atkins chimes in. He says, this is easy. You know, like we're not asking the browser to do anything particularly weird. We're just going to map the color down the same way we map all the other color functions. Like this is not a big deal. He even called it like, this would be like, you know, what do they call it on GitHub when you're committing something for the first time? Like hashtag first bug something, you know, like this would be like something that a browser good first commit. Right. This would be good first commit for a browser vendor person because it's so straightforward to put out there. But I think kind of the point from all this is that it doesn't have to be Chrome who does it. can be Egalia or whatever else, you know. Brian even tells me it's like 150, 200 hours. That's not just to do it, because you got to do it. You got to write tests. You got to play politics a little bit. You got to dance around it a whole bunch. But shit, 200 hours, you get this done.
One person, 1 month. Boom. 2 months. Let's say 2 months. So, I mean, not saying it's easy peasy, but yeah. And like, if it's just some whatever math inside of a C function, like that should be able to port over to other browsers too. What's interesting, I don't know, did you read Christopher Schmidt? A longtime friend of the show, had a excellent color theory and contrast ratio post on 24 accessibility, 24a11y.com, like a advent calendar for accessibility. And he just goes into color. It is just maybe the best like thing about color I've ever read in a long time. Like I just was like gripping my seat with excitement. But at the end, he like actually points to like some issues where like, you know, like the sRGB minimum contrast and stuff is all calibrated wrong or it's off or something. And this is like from some person who and they have a bunch of examples where like it just technically this stuff passes, but it obviously looks terrible. Unreadable.
There's this accessibility blog out there that I can't remember, and I'm not sure I would name and shame on the show anyway, but everything they post, I feel like gets hammered by the accessibility community. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cause it's there was a post on there that had, cause blue is a classic example where it's like a pretty light blue, and like you look at white text on it and you're like, that looks pretty good, but actually fails WCAG or whatever. And you look at black text on it and it totally doesn't read well, but it passes. And so is that what he's talking about here? That it actually,
this one's actually, that one's more like subjective, like,
yeah,
accessibility is ruining my design.
Yeah. Right.
Like blaming the standard. Does that make sense? Like, and this one is more, like, evidence driven, if that makes sense. Like this is more like, hey, I legitimately think the contrast algorithm is wrong. And I think even some of this stuff that, you know, this like, all these color functions and stuff like that, I think they could all play into like having a better, sort of set of color standards or even like groups, you know, or just even thinking around what accessible colors and how do we make colors and create colors on the web and stuff like that. So
yeah, anyway, yeah. I should read that one more carefully. I remember that he posted it. I read the Una Kravitz one who posted about color systems too, but from a like, look at what you can do in CSS without any JavaScript, without any preprocessor or anything. You can, with calc and variable or custom properties and HSL and all that, you can make like a numbers based color system in totally raw CSS, which is cool. And I think, I don't know that her post goes into any of this lab color stuff, but I think that's what's kind of being looked at here, is like people are wanting to be systemic about their colors. I see this all the time. I have guest posts getting written to me all the time. One that we just published about using SAS to like mathematically calculate a color system that's, you know, is based on accessible colors. And I have another one in the pipeline of somebody doing the same kind of thing. People are really trying to approach color scientifically more and more and more and more. And so give us lab color. Yeah. We'll take it. If it enables this stuff, I don't even get it. I don't even understand what the numbers in the LAB function are, but apparently they're better. So,
well, and you know, if we get more math in the browser, like maybe we can start having things like lighten and darken in native CSS.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't even mention talking about the color adjustment functions that there are. Always being talked about, but that's a whole thing. Hey, this episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by An Event Apart. Just put aneventapart.com into your web browser and go check it out. They have 6 shows this year. They call them shows. They are conferences. Washington, D.C., Seattle, Boston, Minneapolis, Orlando, San Francisco. They're multi-day events that are just awesome. They're the best conferences there are for front-end, UX, design, building for the web. I think Dave's going to be at the Seattle one. Go see Dave in Seattle. That'll be awesome. Or even if you miss Dave, pick one of these cities. They're all in the U.S. And just go. You'll learn a ton about They're just the best ones. Food is good. The music is good. They get the best speakers in the business to come talk. I can't say enough good about an event apart. If you're going to pick one conference to go to, that's the one that I would suggest. Do the classic thing where you start thinking about it now, here in January. Start thinking of ways to convince your boss to pay for it or save your pennies or do whatever you have to do and just go and just soak it in and just become better at building websites. Okay, so early on, we talked about all these people got all these predictions. We've been talking about that forever, and I mentioned that Kyle Matthews thread or whatever. It's kind of all over the place of weird predictions and stuff. But one of them is kind of about like that CI/CD is like going to be big. I mean, it's already big. And what I mean is continuous integration and continuous deployment, just meaning that like what we work on our computer, there's like a bunch of stuff that happens on its way to staging and production and all that stuff. Now, of course, that's true. You know, like it's already big now, but I think his idea is that it's just going to be much more prevalent, you know, and I think we're seeing that in a way. Historically, there's always been stuff, you know, Ruby's make, and, you know, there's all kinds of history to this that's interesting. To me, the big player for front-end developers was Grunt. You know, the arrival of Grunt was now front-end developers are in charge of build process kind of stuff. And I was looking back at a post, you know, 24 Ways, RIP, shut down this year. They had a killer end of year, I think. Just the greatest year they've had in a while. To me, a lot of stuff resonated with me. So did that accessibility, that 24A11Y1. They had a damn good year, too. They had a REMS versus EMS one that we could get into, or M versus PIX that was killer.
Perf Planet had one where they measured the impact of CSS and JS on the client. Ooh, he's worth a read.
This is good. So, good. God, what's with blogging in December? People need to blog in August. That's what I'm
hot, man.
Hot. It is hot. Okay, so Grunt comes on the scene, JavaScript-based, so all these JavaScript developers love it, and we use it to process our SaaS and optimize our images and all that stuff. Great. In my post, you know, it was on 24 Ways, and I think I called it like Grunt for people who think things like Grunt are weird and hard, which was a bombshell article for them that year, I hear, because it was from me. It was so foreign to me then, but I just forced myself to learn it. And I was like, this is great. You know, I can use this on all my sites. So now I can do stuff like SaaS, which before I felt foreign to me, because it's not just SaaS that you need to learn. The hard part about learning SaaS is setting yourself up in an environment in which that you can write it nicely. It's more of a dev environment thing than a language thing.
Yeah, the syntax was not really the huge hurdle in SaaS, in my opinion.
But, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, but I think I speculated, what if a GUI for Grunt? To this day, I like GUIs. To this day, I use Git through a GUI. Anything I can use a GUI for, I do. I just like it. I prefer it. If I can, I'm, you know, it's just that's my style.
Use my operating system through a GUI. Did you know? Yep. My whole damn operating system is a GUI. Oh, did you know that? Oh, it's wild.
Dave. Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yep.
Incredible. Yep.
And then I
DOS.
Use a. Yep. Yep. Slack. Technically a GUI. We're not just writing SQL queries in some
days. I think it's a micro browser. Micro front ends within a micro browser. Okay, so, and I speculated Grunt, okay, why not a GUI for Grunt? Like, it just does all the, it's just little, piece together little things. Like, you just end up, you know, copying some chunk of JSON to throw in your config anyway. That, what that config is saying is, like, stuff that could be expressed, in my opinion, with an input or a checkbox or a select button or something. Like, couldn't it be a little DevTools add-on or some kind of app that I open up and I point it at a folder and I say, these are the things that I want to happen in my project. Why isn't there, you know, grunt.gui?
Grunt.exe. Yeah. Give it.
Yeah. Give
like
me
it. Preprocess or, CodeKit is also like, was great for SaaS and stuff like that.
But what's funny about CodeKit is it's kind of best of both worlds in a way. I still have it in my dock here because there's some apps, including the current version of ShopDocShow, which is We're burning to the ground. Finally, we're on it, people. We're neck deep in playing around with the Shop Talk design, in which that we're not using Grunt, but we are using Gulp, I'm afraid. You know,
we are having Git merge collisions, folks. It is that level of excitement around here.
I just was working on it while Ruby napped over the holidays. I had Ruby all by myself, so it was like a break for me. Like, as soon as she went down, I'm like, I need to do something like with my adult brain. And I chose to work on on Shop Talk show. So it was a really fun design, though. Good high five to Afia and Dan, who are killing it on that design.
Thank you.
We never got a GUI for Gulp or Grunt.
No.
But why not now? Like, we're still in this world. It's still there. It still feels like, oh, I just need my build process to do X, Y, and Z. And I think you were, before the show, or thinking in the same.
Yeah, like, you know, when I write a Gulp file or whatever, you know, it's like task, Gulp. Dot task, I name my task, and then there's a function and then stuff happens in it. It's like get all the CSS and then pipe all the CSS to auto prefixer and then pipe all the CSS through, or I guess you do sass and then pipe it to auto prefixer or whatever. Like you do like steps, right?
Yeah.
It's just steps inside. And I don't know if you familiar with Scratch? It's like a programming language they teach kids. Mm-hmm. It's kind of kids, like my nephew has made video games in this and like he like is better at coding than me with this because he uses this visual GUI. Like Scratch is like a MIT kind of software, but you basically like you like drag these blocks, like if or move, turn, go to, if you drag these blocks into your program and then you hit like play and it'll execute these blocks in order and stuff like that. So you like move it left to right or whatever. Usually it's for animation. That's like what kids engage with, but like logic wise, everything's there, like while loops, for loops, things like that.
So it's not limiting your ability. Sometimes I think with a GUI, I'm like, well, okay. So you have a sass block and you have your input block probably, right? Like a square that represents a folder or something that it's watching. And then you connect that block to a sass block and then the sass block to the auto prefixer block and the auto prefixer block to a post CSS block or whatever. And then finally to an output block, which is a different folder probably. And then you hit play and it runs it. And so that's, you know, you'll have to have some opinions in there, but it could be as complicated as you wanted it to. You open up the sass block and it gives you options in there. What kind of formatting do you want? Do you want to, which version of sass do you want to run? That type of thing. It doesn't necessarily need to limit your abilities. And in fact, my GUI client for Git does all kinds of, there's nothing that it can't do. Like it just does all of Git, which is great. I have open on my desktop right now a program called Audio Hijack, which is from, who is it from? Who makes this thing? Rogue Amoeba. And it's audio that's this. I have my microphone as a block and I drag it to my recorder block and then it saves to my desktop. But that block syntax, I drag these little boxes around because it's designed. I use it basic. But you can pipe it through a broadcast thing that sends it up to Twitch or whatever. You can pipe it through a thing that makes my voice sound all crazy or cleans it up or something. You can have 10 things it's stringing it through. So you're proposing the same kind of box, drag boxes to other boxes GUI, but for a build process.
But for build processes.
Beautiful.
And then like you have that visual like thing, like, because I mean, how many times have you like jumped into a project and you just have this, I would throw Webpack under the bus, but you have like a Webpack RZ or whatever, or config, and you're just like, I don't know what's going on here. Let's see. Like, okay, you're using this plugin. Okay, what's this plugin do? Okay, I have to Google it. Okay, here we go. Okay, what's that? You know, and I feel like that's part of the reason no one ever touches those things. Like, once you have it running, like, even if it's running bad and spitting out the wrong thing, you won't fix it, you know? I would say, you know, I would say 40, 60 hours a year of my time is spent tinkering with build processes. You know, like that's terrible. So what if it was visual? Why can't it be visual? Let's make it visual. Like we're making like front end design or no code stuff visual. Like why not make build processes visual? Take it a step further. You ever made a service worker before? That could be visual. It's like these five events. And then you say what you want to happen in the five events. Oh, cache these files. Oh, look in the cache for these files. or for the request. And if it's there, serve the request. Otherwise, don't serve the request. Oh, is it a GET request? Don't do, you know, go get it from cache. Oh, is it a regular request? Don't, or other, a post request? Never do anything with that. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Very simple sort of things we could do to, like, I don't know, make programming these configs and all this crap that we have, we can make it easier. A grunt file, gulp file, webpack config, these are all the same thing. I mean,
yeah,
in my opinion. So, yeah.
I feel like it's just complicated enough that it's off-putting to entrepreneurs or something. You're like, this thing is just stepping into a bee's nest of complication because it's just hard.
Or maybe it could happen in, not like to put it all on code, but like what if it's in your code editor, Visual Studio Code or something? You open a Webpack RC and it's like, oh, cool, I'll just give you the block UI for it instead, you know?
Yeah, I wonder if that's the what you'd approach, because some part of it makes it appealing that it doesn't, you don't even see a gulp file. It's not like a GUI on top of a gulp file. It's just its own thing. Like it's not a GUI. It's just no code, you know? You know, I think Buddy is, it's not quite this, but it does have these pipeline ideas that's kind of there, but the things that you put in the pipeline are so simple. It's just like, it's like BYO stuff. It's like, run this command. You're like, well, that command, you still have to then write all the code to do what that command does. So it's not actually helping you. It's like a little bit deeper level than that. Like,
I feel like that's sort of, GitHub Actions kind of has this, like, you know, if this, then that sort of UI, you know, like, if this happens, then do this. And like, that's all I'm saying is, like, maybe as a, like, the minimum is like, if this, then that for build processes, like how, you know, that I have on my local machine. I don't want to, like, whatever, sign up for a third party just to,
You want it to be local, a local deal? Yeah, that's tricky too.
I think local. I mean, yeah. I mean, I guess now I'm just asking.
Maybe it works in both ways, just, like, you know, like if it can run locally in a Docker or whatever, why can't it run on a server too?
Well, yeah. Or like what we're just saying before the show, right? We have WordPress, right? We have WordPress and we're using Gulp locally. And one of our collisions we had was on CSS, right? Yeah. Like, oh crap, our CSS files are colliding. Like, and we know how to do that. Like, we know, okay, let's not do the commit, you know? Okay, now we'll just have to go to the website and we'll have to, like, add a build process in here into the web. Like there's ways to do that, but wouldn't it be cool if you're just like, cool, go into my WordPress build, and then I just edit the block interface for how to build my website, and then it's done. You know, like you go into Netlify and they give you a little command. They're like, what commands do you want to run to build your website? And you're like, no, or whatever, npm run build or whatever. So it would just be cool if you could, I don't know, if you could just kind of visually program this wherever you go. That'd be my dream in 2020. It
seems a little inevitable, especially in like a 5 to 10 year time frame, you know, because it is true that we're just doing the same things. Process my code in this way, optimize my assets in this way, put my files in this place, move my files from this place, run this special action that is unique to my site. You know, it's all pretty similar.
Yeah. And like, if this is what programming is, you know, like, can we just make it easier instead of like the stupid way where, like, if you miss the semicolon, it doesn't work at all or whatever, you know, like, can we just do it a better way? I don't know. That's all I'm asking for.
Well, that was fun one to day. Think about. Yeah. One day, perhaps make it for Windows first and make Dave happy.
Yeah. Make it for Windows. Chumps. I got nothing over here. Y'all got your cool little screen recording apps. No, I'm good.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Jetpack. That's jetpack.com. Jetpack is a plugin for your self-hosted WordPress site that, in a sense, connects it to WordPress.com and thus gives it all kinds of powers. And in fact, in the past, I've kind of described it as like a kitchen sink of new superpowers for your website, including just really classically, obviously great stuff from a front-end development perspective, like having your images CDN hosted and lazy loaded, just flip a switch and it's on and you're doing that. So all kinds of great stuff. I won't do the whole feature list here because it's just too much to cover in a small ad, but there's a change this year in Jetpack that is worth getting excited about. If you hear me say, oh, it's a whole kitchen sink full of stuff, and you're like, gross, I don't want a whole kitchen sink. Well, fine. Like, I might argue against that a little bit because you just turn on what you want and leave off the other stuff, but whatever. You might feel like you're like paying for too much or something if you decide to opt for a paid plan on it. You can now a la carte perhaps one of the best features on Jetpack, which is the backups. So if you don't want anything else in Jetpack except for the backups, which is the best possible way to back up your site, it backs up your theme and like all the files of your entire site and the media, all the images you've uploaded and all this stuff, and the database. So like it is your whole site, all the backup stuff, super well done. And in fact, if you go all the way, you know, pro up all the way, it'll back up in real time. So it's not like yesterday's backup. It's like last minute's update, which is awesome. And it helps you roll back to that moment. So if there's any problems at all with your site, you can just be like, boop, I want to roll back to that point in time and deal with that. So if that's all you care about, that's what you really need and want for your site, you got it with Jetpack, and you can a la carte it. You don't have to like opt in for the kitchen sink plan if you want. So that's that, Jetpack. Well, let's do a few questions from the people just to say that we got to some. Huh? I think there's some interesting ones in here this week. Of course, we encourage you to send in your questions from the website. Hopefully, we'll make that more obvious and easy in the new design, because we love your questions.
Yeah. I'll go. Ben Gosho writes in, I maintain a PHP site that uses third-party API wrapper. Can be found here. As I understand it, the wrapper uses Guzzle 6 to make curl calls to the API and return content. Works great. I use it to display three events in a small section towards the bottom of the homepage. And however, the other day the API went down, and since my homepage's calls vendor autoload.php on line one, the entire page was blank. PHP was logging an error 500 and then just quitting. So like you're getting the white page of death, I guess, on the PHP, right? Mm. Or the like system error, which also is double suck. I'd prefer the white page. Site down. My question is this: what type of fallback needs to be implemented? If so, and how, so that the API goes in, if the API goes down again, it doesn't take down my entire site. I've used Netty PHP caching in the past, but I don't think it solves the issue of reaching the endpoint or not.
There's just,
what do you do?
I hate to tell you, Ben, there's just kind of some bad coding happened here. So what's happening is that a browser asks your server for the HTML for that website, and it goes to your server, and your server's like, this is PHP. I'm going to execute this PHP, but part of this PHP that I'm executing has to ask another server for a web request, and it's going to go make that request, get it back, continue running that PHP, and then finish, generate that HTML, and send it back. So instead of your server just being ready to respond to that request, it has to ask some other server for code first. Now, that's not the end of the world, but in that situation, all red flags have to be up, and you have to say, we cannot rely on that third-party server having stuff. We just can't. We can't, because it's going to happen like this. For speed and reliability reasons, we should make that request some other time, and it can be the first request if it has to be. Ideally, you run it on some kind of cron job or something that hits that third-party server, gets what it needs, and then caches it on your own server so that when you make that request, that PHP is going to run and pull from that cache, which you know is full, because you can just kind of guarantee that some point, something put something in that file and do it that way. You got to have some kind of cache in the way. So yeah, I don't know what Netty PHP caching is or whatever, but fine, use that or save some stuff to a file or something, you know. But you can't rely on making a third-party request. And so we don't do this in the Shop Talk Show site, but I'll probably put it in the new version for CSS Tricks does, for example. If you go to the homepage of CSS Tricks, you see some jobs at the bottom from the job board. It's the very same job board that CodePen runs. Although on the CodePen side, what we do is a little jQuery. I think Dave just rewrote it in vanilla JavaScript because why not? You know, let's get rid of jQuery.
It was easy.
So we just, when you load the jobs page on Shop Talk Show, JavaScript goes and asks that page for data, gets it and puts all the jobs on the page because there's a JSON API that we can hit for that data. Now that will never white page of death the Shop Talk Show site because it's happening client side. If the request fails, you just won't see any jobs there, but at least it's not white page. It's still not ideal. On the homepage of CSS Tricks, I make the request for those jobs with PHP, like you are. But I use this concept called WordPress transience. So it makes the request, puts the data in WordPress transience, which is a cache, and then it pulls from that cache. So if the request ever fails, the cache is still there. It just sits there. It will asking for a transient will never white the page. It'll just return nothing if it just happens to have nothing. But it's just coded in that way. So when you're dealing with server-side code that way, and Dave, maybe you can expand or correct me if I'm wrong, you just can't have it rely on a third party. Not to mention, it'll just be slow as hell.
Yeah, well, and what seems like a bummer is this, the it's Ministry Platform API, which I guess probably some faith-based ministry manager. But it, like, it sounds like that code is hard coded in there and like you require this autoload.php and that is what makes the request. So I would file a bug, you know, with them, but then, yeah, you're going to need a cache. You're going to need like some fault tolerance. Like if this fails, then do this, like, then like return nothing or just an empty array of events or groups or whatever it is. It looks like it has like events and groups as kind of its two main tables. Or like you're saying, the cache is basically just always hit the file that I have on my server. And if there happens to be a newer file, like we can go get that later, like refresh that cache, but like, well, we can always fall back to this file I have on my server. So that's probably what I would, I mean, I think that's what you're going to have to do. You know, you could always make the endpoint, you know, like if you can't like modify the source, like this is a package that you don't have any like control over, then that's one thing. Like you basically just need to like, have like an if statement where you simulate an empty event, but if you don't have control over that, like the autoload.php is just failing, then gosh, what do you do?
Are you blaming this on the, because they didn't even write this fetch call, like their API wrapper should have had fault tolerance built into it.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's, it's the level is like one level deeper than their own code. I mean, if it's your own code, you can control that. Like you need to do your best, but if it's not, then what I would probably do is spin out whatever page.php events.php into another, its own page, or, and then make like a call to that page, like from a static page, just like we're doing with the Shop Talk Show, like, but you're hitting your own fake API. Go hit that. And then if it's a 500, like, you know, or from your own server, then just gracefully handle it. However you like, we're having troubles or blah, blah, blah. But, I would, yeah, I don't know.
Two final thoughts here. One is just do it with JavaScript. So it's fine. All you're trying to do is show three events at the bottom of your page. Just snag them with JavaScript and throw them in a template. And is it any surprise that people are so into Jamstack? Like with a Jamstack build, you do this at build time. And then you can just run it every day or run it like Phil Hawksworth every second. Don't do that.
It'd be worth like whatever. Like if I just logged into my computer, I mean, crap, you can probably configure the robot on your phone who shall not be named, you can probably configure that to like go do a Netlify build for you. I mean, like you really
I know. Anyway. I literally use a Zapier to rebuild the conferences website. I just do it once a day so that the dates are right on the site. But the point is, within a Jamstack like setup, you can make this call to whatever API has these events at build time. You run it every day, and the events get the, and then when, like, remember how I started this answer? When your browser makes a request for this website and the HTML comes back, the server's just like, here you go. It's already got it. It doesn't have, it makes no network requests. It'll be 10 times faster.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could make like my events.netlify.com and just have it just hit your own little private endpoint.
I love that.
Save it. Like you could just.
I want to see more people use Netlify for little bits and pieces like that. Like you don't have to rebuild your whole site. You just make it do one dumb little job. Give your own little API. Like build your own little service that has like myevents.json.com and it puts it on your server.
You mean like build your own podcast feed just for a secret set of MP3s you got? Why? I don't know who would do that. Who would do that?
That's hilarious. All right, here's a quick one. Taj writes in, I work for a digital marketing company, and it looks like it's about half and half SEO specialists and web designers. We're looking to redo one of our sites. We're going back and forth about platforms. So we're on WordPress right now because the SEO people like it. It's easy to edit content, optimize pages, yada, yada. But the web designers don't like it because they feel like most of the themes are very cookie cutter, and they feel like they have little control over the look and feel of the site. Is there a better platform which has the ease of WordPress for posting and editing content but gives designers more control over the look and feel of the site? Now, I would, of course, just hit everyone with a shovel on their head with this and saying that WordPress absolutely doesn't care about the look and feel of your site. You can do whatever you want. We're doing some crazy nonsense with the Shop Talk Show rebuild.
It is cooking out there.
And CSS Tricks is WordPress, and like it doesn't. You can do whatever you want in there. I don't know what your web designers are talking about. WordPress does not enforce you to do anything with it. You can go as crazy as you want in there. Now, I get a lot of people do use themes, so fine. You know, like if there's no talent at your company for editing WordPress themes, and that's not a slight. It's just different people have different abilities. Then I can understand, but like I don't know what you mean. I don't know what the skill level is of someone who feels like they have complete control over the look and feel of a site in one CMS, but not another. You know, they must at least in their head somewhere know that like, oh, I could control this. I just don't have that. Like if somebody threw a Drupal site at me and said, Chris, please design this beautifully. I'd be like, I know that I can. I have no Drupal experience. So it's going to be a little bit of a curveball, weirdo week of learning curve for me. But I know that Drupal doesn't tell me what I can and can't do with the front of the site.
Right. It's going to be hard to get SEO folks off of WordPress. I'll just say that straight up. Cause like Yoast and stuff like that is so like critical and so like easy.
Yeah. I don't like how it freaking updates every minute and there's bugs you about all kinds of stuff. There's plenty of stuff that's obnoxious about Yoast, but it is also pretty nice. I think like,
yeah, well in like, you know, You gotta empathize. You gotta put on a different brain. It's like, what's important to them? Oh, like descriptions and keywords is like the most important, or like, you know, getting a little green check mark that you have been indexed and stuff like that. Like those are very important features. I will say went with, last year did a couple, craft, CMS stuff.
Yeah.
And I would super recommend it. It has a pretty good SEO setup.
Hell yeah.
And, but you know, don't like replatforming sucks. So like make sure you're good, like make prototype it, make sure everyone's comfortable or whatever. I wouldn't do it just to do it. You could probably spend more time, whatever, beefing up WordPress theme skills, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, I think I would work with your designers and maybe solve the like, whatever, the cookie cutter theme thing, like figure out how to break out of that. It would be kind of but that said, I can smell a WordPress page. I know what they smell like. So there's a vibe. Like Drupal pages have a smell. So anyway, but I like Craft. Craft is good, and clients tend to like it. So you could check that out. It's not going to have all the SEO tooling, but you could prototype with like Netlify and a static site like Gatsby or Jekyll or 11D or something like that with Netlify CMS. I would recommend that too. Just be like, is this like acceptable to everybody? So
they have, yeah, it's, a, it's like, cool. I'm into that open authoring thing. It does too, not to take it too far, but I'm going to put it on the conferences site I have, because it's one thing that's neat about it is that I can, like, I have four conferences on my to-do list that I got to add to this site that runs Netlify CMS. So I don't have to write a single line of code. I go put /admin at the end of the URL. I log in. I add them all. That's great. But what if you could do that? What if Dave could do that? I didn't even invite Dave to do that, but he could, because I just turn on this open authoring feature. And when Dave adds the conference, it becomes a PR for me in GitHub to do it. So that feels like a little ad for Netlify, but I feel like I'm a freaking walking ad for Netlify. So sorry.
It's fine if they want to pay me to be an ad for Netlify. yeah. So, I mean, but prototype it out, because I don't think that's like a near, you know, mix of SEO and web designers. Like, you gotta make sure the tools you use work for your company. So, in my opinion, so. All right. Next question. We want to do one more here.
I'd love to. This is a good one.
James Hammond writes in, how would you recommend someone getting started into web components? Start getting into web components. Any ideas there?
I don't know. Like, this is just a bee's nest, isn't it? Here's one. Here's a way to get started.
This is a very 2020 question. Yeah. This is such a 2020 question.
People are, you know, I feel like they're warming up to web components again because the whatever, they're framework agnostic and yada yada. But I still don't think like you're going to be like, wow, I'm going to build this big production app. I'm just going to use all web components. Because, for example, web components don't help you with state. So what are you going to use for state management? I don't know. You're going to have to pick something. So like, I don't understand how that operates in a way. Like, that seems like such a big thing in my brain, and maybe it's not, but like, I can't use web components because it doesn't have the crap I need, but it does like lighter stuff than that. For example, there's this great YouTube embed that Paul Irish put out, light YouTube embed. Lots of people were playing with this idea, but Paul just made it a web component, shipped it on GitHub, and anybody can use it. And it's kind of a great example of something that you could just use anywhere, including on your dang React site if you wanted to, but it just encapsulates a small bit of functionality that totally makes sense, right? Instead of embedding an iframe straight away on your site like YouTube does, which is like over 2 megabytes, no joke, of stuff that it downloads to put a YouTube iframe on your site, it puts like a lightweight image there instead and a play button. Functionally, it's the same exact thing. You play the play button, the video loads, which then is in an iframe, and plays the video. So, but that means the loading of the page like 50 times faster because it's just cool, right? What a perfect little idea for an embed, what for a web component. It doesn't matter what framework you use. It's just a nice API.
Yeah. No, I mean, Paul says it renders 224 times faster than the normal YouTube embed. So there you go.
So third-party web components is a way for you to dip your toe.
There's like a light Vimeo too. It looks like somebody has. And then somebody also made one where the play button's like included. I think Paul and they have the they have like a div where you have a play button that then gets all the ARIA, I think. But anyway, what I was going to say is I made a website called Awesome Standalones on my GitHub. davidtron5000/awesome-standalones. This was based on that blog post about accordion and details or whatever. But just the idea here is like, wouldn't it be cool, like a list of like web components, but not every web component ever, but just like things you can just like copy a URL and import in your project today. So that's what it is. And that's kind of how we're defining standalones. There's really like some bad nuance happening in the, standalones is a terrible name, but, in the comments, I think like people want to like, it's not clear what standalones is or whatever, what that means, but, it's just this idea of like, What's like a, just a component I can use. It does not attach to a framework or a design system or whatever. Can I just use it? So, and then, but if you want to start writing them, I recommend Lit Element, getting into that. There's Lit HTML, which Lit Element uses, but Lit Element is kind of, if you're coming from a React world, especially, like, it's probably the easiest way to like get a feel for how things are. So I would recommend that. So it's a pretty good situation. So, I've written a few things in Lit and it's just like, oh, okay. It just works. Yeah. And I can write it in a code pen too. So.
So it, but like, so if you had state management, what Lit does is like, you know, cause you make, you give it like, you give Lit a template, right? With a template literal, which is a very nice way to make a little chunk of HTML, isn't it? God, I love template literals.
Yeah. And you know, I'm not a pro here. but some of this, the like component level state is just handled itself sort of, you know, like you don't, you know, it's like you just pass a update a prop and it's like, oh, the prop updated. Okay, cool. Like, I'll just update myself, you know? And you do that through like normal JavaScript. You don't have to like commit to a store or something or set state or something like that. That said, if you wanted something interesting, you could use Haunted, JS hooks. Haunted is a thing that goes, it's React hooks for web components. And there's some pretty good examples of that, like being used with Lit or Hyper HTML. So pretty cool. Like you can use state in a component level way like that if you don't like that. But then what do you do like if it's like you need a global store? I don't know. You could maybe use like Omni Store or something from Develop It, Jason Miller from Preact. So if you wanted,
the magic of it is that, let's say you have a really, you know, you build all of your stuff with Lit, which is little tiny components and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So let's say you're three components up. It's a pretty damn big component. Maybe it's your whole sidebar and you change a little data on it. Well, if you're just winging it, the whole sidebar is going to re-render. You're going to go dot enter any HTML equals this whole new template. And that's not an acceptable performance situation in most cases. So what Lit does is it does the, I don't know if it's virtual DOM or what it is, but it knows, oh, only just this little bit of data changed. I'm intelligent enough to go change just the little chunk of the DOM tree that needs to be changed, just like React does. So it has that ability baked into it. It's just templating with smart updating. It doesn't actually help you manage the state, but if you are managing your state in some other way, then cool, you know.
Yeah, it's not, so it's not virtual DOM, but it like Svelte and Lit don't use that, but it is like a but yeah, it'll create like a document fragment basically, or a template fragment or something. And yeah, it just intelligently knows like, oh, you're trying that updated. Okay, I'll go update just the value in I'll use the same template, but I'll just spit out the value correctly. So it's weird. I don't know. It's smart and it's very lightweight. So
yeah,
I'm curious where this goes, but I do like, you know, you use this, you use Haunted, you use like, and then you use like Omni Store to like put some, but congratulations, you just made your own Franken framework that no one else uses. Like, that's not good either. Right. Like,
right. Probably
you just kind of made this weird,
You know,
right. I would just use Vue to be honest, but that said, I don't know. I like Vue quite a bit. As I've said before, but I've built a couple apps and I can actually, you know, when, I don't know, I'm getting like flash of handlebar templates. Does that make sense? And I don't even know how that's possible, but like, I'll pull up a app I'm working on and just for like on a phone or a slow phone or something. And just ever so briefly, I'll just see a little curly brace that, you know, curly brace template or whatever, while it's like mounting itself or figuring itself out. And I'm like, ooh, I do not like that whatsoever. So I'm sure there's a way around it, but it's just a horrible.
What would you like? This is a day. Has it been a minute since you've had to write any PHP, or do you dabble?
Oh yeah. I'm not good at PHP anymore. I think I was working on the Shop Talk site cause it's in WordPress or
whatever. Yeah. And we've had to write a little bit of PHP to get it done, but not too much. But
I was trying to do something and it just was like, nope, you did not even do it. So Go ahead.
I have a situation came up where I needed to do some templating, right? I'm so used to working in templates. Like it's starting to bug me a little bit about working in WordPress. Like the new, you know, like let's say I do a new design a year from now for CSS Tricks is somewhat likely, you know, I want to write it in real components. So I'm going to be looking into like, you know, the like Forest or I can't even remember. There's some Twig. True. Well, Twig is like the
offshoot.
Twig is like just a PHP templating language. But there's some like frameworks that use it on top of it that are like, you can do like kind of like some MVC stuff for WordPress that appeals to me because I want to work in like true components. But hey, maybe I'll just do Gatsby or maybe I'll just use Vue something and actually just make them JavaScript components. But anyway, that's not neither here nor there. The idea is that I needed a template right now. I needed a little template because, so basically I have this advertising partner. So they're not sponsoring the show, but we know them. It's Mark and whatever in Minneapolis. Front End Masters, you know, great mm-hmm, partner, mm-hmm. right? They're going to be doing some advertising on CSS Tricks this year. And I don't have any other real advertising partner or like learning partner like that. So I'm just going to like tell everybody, you know, you want to learn more about this topic? Go learn it on Front End Masters. It's going to be a cool partnership. I dig it. So one of the ways that I'm like put together for them, I'm like, this is what we'll do. If a WordPress, if a article has the tag React, then I'll show an ad for Front End Masters that's like about React and Front End Masters and what they have on Front End Masters. And if it has a tag Vue, we'll send them to the Vue course. And if it has a tag Webpack, we'll send them to a Webpack course, you know? And we got like a, you know, not quite 100. There's like groups of them, but you know, it'll be a lot of these like customized templates that all have different HTML because they have different images, they have different headlines, they have different URLs, right? Which is just a little, to me, is a little React component or Vue component or anything else. But what's that? What is like the manifestation of a component with different data in PHP? Well, a little Twig thing, right? But you don't have Twig in WordPress. Like I think you could probably find something to add it, but I was like, this is just one little thing. I don't want to add a whole templating language for that. Like, what are the options? So you make a function, right, that just returns some HTML and you pass the data to the function. But then how do you write that HTML that isn't obnoxious, you know? There's no template literals in PHP. You have to write this string concatenation garbage, you know? But they have a thing that's a little bit like template literals called HereDoc that's like these weird three angle bracket things in the PHP syntax.
Okay, yeah.
That's a little bit like template literals because then you can just like use dollar sign variables within it. So I have that going. And I think that's an okay system, actually. You know, like it's just a PHP function that returns a chunk of HTML that plops these variables into it so I can call that function with the variables. But I'll tell you, even calling the function with like long strings of where the image is hosted, because like I'll throw the images on Cloudinary and then use like that long URL for where the image is, and then a title and then a chunk of HTML as parameters, makes the call to the function really gross code.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It starts getting rowdy. Yeah.
So I haven't solved that. Like it solved the problem. Like I'm doing it. It works. It's in production. It's the whole thing. But the way that it's coded is like not super my favorite, but it's like an opportunity to grow as a developer and figure out what the heck to do here.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, you can also do like the import a partial or whatever, like, but
yeah. And then
it's different.
You
right?
can't pass a partial locals in PHP. You have to like set them as, but you can kind of, cause you just set them as a global variable and then the partial uses that global and then you just reset the globals. But it's like, that's kind of gnarly too. Isn't that gnarly?
Right. The scope is defined in the parent. So that's rough. That's rough. But oh, well, I definitely like working on this shop doc redesign. It's like, oh man, I'm so used to some kind of component system and we don't really have one, you know? And so it's like, okay, how do I do it here? It's a little different. So, but anyway, we'll figure it out, I'm sure. But it's just figuring it out. So, all right, we are
out of time.
Right at the hour, Malik. We got power down. We do have a fun season here for you of the Shop Talk Show. Eighth season of Shop Talks. We did it. So thank you. Eighth or ninth? Have we been doing it? I forget. gripes. I should know.
Well, we're coming up on episode 400, which I would, that's 7 weeks away. So gosh willing, we'll launch our website at that time.
Yeah. So look forward to that. We really appreciate everything y'all do for our show, sending in questions, telling people about it, subscribing in your podcatchers. We appreciate that. Be sure to start hard. Favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. If there's something you want to hear about in 2020, ping us at Shop Talk Show. We'll put it in our show ideas list. We got one a mile long. So we really appreciate y'all again. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs. Get a brand new one for the brand new year because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
Shoptalkshow.com.